Hannah, your mother and I have been talking, and we feel that it may be time. How can I phrase this? Well, we see how well you're doing at work, and you really seem to be figuring out what it is that you want. But it may be time for one final push.
What is a final push?
We're not going to be supporting you any longer.
See, I wasn't going to phrase it like that, Lorraine, the way you phrased it.
But I have no job.
No, you have an internship that you say is going to turn into a job.
I don't know when.
You graduated from college 2 years ago. We've been supporting you for 2 years, and that's enough.
Do you know how crazy the economy is right now? I mean, all my friends get help from their parents.
We are sympathetic to that.
But I'm your only child. It's not like I'm draining all your resources. I mean, this feels very arbitrary.
You don't know anything about our finances. I mean, we're professors, Hannah, professors. You know, we can't keep bankrolling your groovy lifestyle.
My groovy lifestyle?
The bills add up. We're covering your rent, your insurance, your cell phone.
You said it was cheaper for you if I was on the family plan.
Yeah.
May I get you more of anything?
No, she's fine.
That was a clip from the premiere episode of Girls, in which Hannah, played by Lena Dunham, was thrown out into the cold, cruel world by her loving, but no longer infinitely patient or generous parents. In season two of Girls, Hannah still struggles, financially and emotionally. But Lena Dunham, who created and portrays her, is doing just fine. In 2010, she wrote, directed, and starred in the independent film Tiny Furniture, which led to her HBO series with Judd Apatow as one of its executive producers. She also has a multi-million dollar book deal now, all at the age of 26. Terry Gross spoke with Lena Dunham last year when Girls was premiering on HBO.
We just heard the opening scene of Girls from episode one. And, you know, like your character gets off to such a kind of almost unlikable start. You know, she sounds so entitled, like, no, you're my parents. You owe it to me to support me.
You feel like the next words out of her mouth are going to be, I didn't ask to be born. She doesn't say it, but it's implied.
There's this sense of entitlement and also the sense that she wants to be treated as a child, but she also wants to be treated as an adult.
Yeah, which I think is such a marker of this age. I mean, it's so funny. I am, you know, a working woman out in the world, but I still live with my parents half the time. I've been sort of taking this very long, stuttering period of moving out. And so I really relate to that feeling because I feel like I'm constantly asking them to please stay out of my work life, but also please bring me soup. Like, it's this weird moment where you just don't have a sense of what age-appropriate behavior is because there sort of is no such thing as age-appropriate behavior.
Do you feel in a way that your character is getting off to an unfair start by opening this series in a way that's asking people to judge her, that's asking people to say, oh, she's so privileged, and, you know, she feels so entitled?
Yeah, I mean, I think after that first scene, she has to earn the admiration of the viewer in some way. And, you know, it's up for debate whether she ever does that, because the fact is, I always say about Hannah, her name's Hannah Horvath, my character, and although she is in some ways very close to me, I also refer to her as her because she does feel like the sort of weird alien succubus creature that I've created. But she, you know, I always say that if there's two choices, the good choice and the bad choice, she'll look at both of them, seriously consider each, and then in good faith go with the bad choice. Like, she just does, she's a little hapless and a little disaster prone. And so, you know, it's not like in the next scene she redeems herself by acting like the most responsible woman you've ever met. But I also think that it felt right to me to start kind of laying her issues bare immediately. I didn't want you to sort of fall. She doesn't like save a cat and then you find out that she's a brat. It's like, you know, and have to choose to love her despite it.
And then
if you are going to love her.
And it must be difficult for you in a way because you wrote the series and conceived of it and star in it, people assume, well, Hannah is really just Lena Dunham. And therefore, Lena Dunham is spoiled.
I'm sure that I've had some really unattractive spoiled moments in my years, but I've never, that conversation that Hannah had has never happened to me, in large part because when I graduated from college, my parents let me live with them, but they made it really clear that they weren't going to support any of my endeavors. They were like, you can live with us, and that's a great gift we can give you, but you've got to have a job. You have to figure out, just like we did, how to make a creative life, and we're giving you a great step ahead by already living in the city that you want to be in, but we're not going to serve that function for you. Our parents didn't do it for us, and we don't think it's healthy.
I was just making me think about how almost treacherous it must be to be so out there when you're still in a fairly formative phase, you know, when you're in the early days of independent adulthood and you're putting your life out there on the screen in a transformed fictional way, but you're drawing on your own experiences and you're turning them into negative experiences for dramatic purposes for your character. So it really must be transformational for you to be going through this now, since the early 20s are a transformational period for most people one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. My dad is a painter and he teaches graduate school. And one of the things that he always says is he thinks students should wait until after graduate school to show their work because he thinks it's important to have that moment where you kind of are experimenting without the feeling of someone's gaze on you or without the feeling that you're sort of going to be held to the decisions that you make in your creative process throughout your life. But the thing is, I come from a very different generation than my father. You know, bad poetry I wrote in high school can still be found on the internet. And, you know, there's a weblog of our college newspaper. You know, there's so many different stages of my creative development are sort of on record if somebody were to choose to look for them. And so I've sort of just made the decision to be okay with the fact that I'm not going to love everything that I put out into the world. And I kind of go, well, maybe my hope is, oh, maybe it'll sometime be helpful for another young artist to sort of see my development and see the way that I sort of lived out loud a little bit. But there's definitely times where I don't think I let the sort of the weight of it hit me, the amount of stuff about my own life, the amount of images of my own body that I've put out into the world. And then I also love what I do, and no one has forced me to do it. But there's the occasional moment at like 3 a.m. where I suddenly realize, like, my breasts are on TV, as is a fairly accurate account of my first post-college relationship, and you have your, like, 5 minutes of existential terror before you return to sleep about that topic.
I think it's interesting that the title of the series is Girls. When I was in my late teens and 20s, my friends and I insisted on calling each other and having other people call us women. It was the era of the women's movement, and we weren't girls, we were women. And we certainly weren't dames, we were women. And we weren't like ladies, we were women. And so to hear the series like Girls, and I think that's probably, maybe not, but I think probably the word that most young women in their 20s would use to describe themselves now.
It is. I feel like it's the word that most women in their early 20s used to describe themselves and most rock singers use to address women who have done them wrong. So I like it for all of those reasons. You know, that was the brainchild of Judd Apatow. It had been going by the untitled Lena Dunham Project for the duration of shooting the pilot. And Judd and I had looked at a list of titles I'd come up with, and every single one of them had girl in the title somewhere. And this was actually before the sort of zeitgeisty. I mean, I think like 4 different shows came on the air with the word girl in the title this year alone, like New Girl, then 2 Broke Girls, then some new show called Dumb Girls that was coming to MTV. I was excited by all of their content and didn't want us all to be lumped into one big girl pile, but that's a digression. Judd said, what about if we just tried Girls? And as is a lot of times when somebody has a really great idea, my first reaction to it is total revulsion, and then probably because I didn't think of it, and then I sat with it for a couple of hours and realized that there was something pretty perfect about it, because even if the experience of these characters isn't universal, they think it is. The way they sort of get through their day is to go like, we're having the classic female New York experience. We will be able to live to tell about this someday. We are the girls. So there was a lot of kind of poetic ways that it worked for me. And then when all those other girl shows started coming out, we sort of wondered, are we supposed to change titles? Should we jump ship here? And my dad said, don't do it. You have the meta title. He was like, Girls is the meta title. And I trust my dad in most matters, creative and personal. So I quoted him loudly and we kept going.
So I want to play another scene from Girls. And this is a scene where your character, Hannah, is going to her boyfriend to break up with him because he texted her a picture of his privates. And then texted, this wasn't meant for you. And she thinks, well, like, who wasn't meant for? And like, what's going on here? Is there another girl? And so you show up unannounced at his door to break up with him. And in this scene, you're explaining to him who you are and what kind of girl you are.
I've never asked you for anything. I don't even want anything, okay? I respect your right to see and do whoever you want, and I don't even want a boyfriend, so...
What do you want?
I just want someone who wants to hang out all the time and thinks I'm the best person in the world and wants to have sex with only me. And it makes me feel very stupid to tell you this because it makes me sound like a girl who wants to, like, go to brunch. And I really don't want to go to brunch, and I don't want you to, like, sit on the couch while I shop or, like, even meet my friends. I don't even want that.
I think that's really an interesting description of how she's defining herself as a girl. Why was it important for your character to get that out?
Well, I think that there's a way that Hannah and... by extension, myself, she has trouble with certain kinds of earnest expressions, and maybe that's a generational thing. Maybe that's her own anxiety that if she expresses herself in a true way, she's going to get shut down. But I think it was important for her, even as she said this incredibly sort of sweet, heartfelt thing, which is, I want you to want to spend time with just me. I want you to want to be with me. I mean, she wants what everybody wants, which is...
She wants a monogamous boyfriend.
unmonogamous loving partner. And yet she feels like she needs to explain that while she wants the thing everybody else wants, she is not like everybody else. And I think that is the important distinction to her, is that she thinks with the desire for a boyfriend comes all of these other trappings of being a sort of like bougie woman that she doesn't think of herself as. She's like, I'm a writer and a thinker. And so... anything you equate with being a boyfriend is not what you're going to get with me, even though once they were together, she probably would want him to meet her friends. She probably would want him to sit on the couch while they shopped, and God forbid she would want him to go to brunch. But in this moment, she sort of needs to define herself as this completely other type of woman, even as she wants what women want.
But is your character trying to say, I'm not the person you're going to see in Chick Lit or, you know, chick films, or you know what I'm saying?
Definitely. I think she definitely is. I mean, I...
And do you feel that way? Do you feel like I don't relate to a certain kind of character that I see in literature or that I see in movies?
I do feel that way. It's funny because romantic comedy, when done right, is my favorite genre. You know, it's just a genre that's very human. It's, you know, the sort of anything that has... Bridesmaids had a pink poster and I loved it, but I don't want to call out any movie specifically, but there is a certain kind of film that isn't even fun to me in a guilty pleasure way, and there's a certain kind of chick lit book that isn't even fun to me in a guilty pleasure way because I don't see any of myself in it, because none of my... just none of my actions, maybe this is a speaking to my age, which is 25, but I don't think this is the case. None of my actions have ever sort of been motored by the search for a husband or wondering if I was going to have a family someday or wanting to live in a really great house or thinking it would be really great to have a diamond. Like, there's just certain drives, and I know that maybe those things are representative of like a bigger desire for love or something else. I'm sure that those writers would not appreciate me distilling their thesis down to the search for a diamond, but there's a kind of female character that doesn't make sense to me, if that makes sense to you.
Season 2 of Girls, the comedy series starring and created by Lena Dunham, begins Sunday on HBO. And season 1 is now out on DVD. Dunham plays Hannah, a young college graduate who is having trouble finding a job, supporting herself, and figuring out what she wants sexually and emotionally from her boyfriends, and what they want from her. These issues extend to her former boyfriends, as heard in this early scene from season 2. Hannah now lives with one ex-boyfriend, Elijah, who's gay, but she still drops in on another ex, Adam, played by Adam Driver, because he broke his leg just as they were breaking up their relationship.
Okay, I have your pain medication, hand sanitizer, lotion, magazine, granola bar. Want that now?
No, I'll eat that later.
There's a bunch of stuff in here. I will see you tomorrow.
Do you want to watch Bag of Vants?
I can't. Okay, I'm working the door.
But do you want to watch Bag of Vants extras?
No, like Elijah's being a fascist dictator. I really gotta go. I'll see you later.
What, do you want to make balloon faces?
No, like, Elijah's being crazy. I have to go back to the party.
Okay, Hannah, stop! You're the best thing in my life. I don't know how to behave without you. I'd die if you go away.
I don't want to be with you.
You do! We laid right there in that bed a month ago, and you told me if you ever broke up with me that I shouldn't let you. Because you were just being crazy, and how every guy you ever loved was gay. and how I was the only one that made you feel anything.
Don't get up, Adam. Don't get up.
Lena Dunham and Adam Driver as Hannah and Adam in the HBO series Girls. Terry Gross spoke with Lena Dunham last year. A heads up to parents of young children. Part of the following conversation is devoted to the sexual issues explored in Girls. Nothing explicit, but the subject of sex will come up during the next several minutes.
So your character is in relationship with a guy who, it's hard to tell if he really cares about your character or not. He wants a sex partner, that's for certain.
Yes, and he does want a sex partner, and he wants a sex partner who's flexible both time-wise, emotionally, and physically.
Yes, and he wants to enact certain sexual fantasies and have certain sexual positions that he seems to have probably gotten from porn sites. And your character goes along with it, even though your character doesn't seem to be getting any sexual pleasure out of it. It's more like an activity they can do together that makes him happy and that's okay with her. It's kind of like having a boyfriend who likes to go hiking, and it's not really your thing, but you'll go on a hike with him.
Yeah.
So do you get the sense that a lot of guys your age have learned about sex through porn sites and have these unrealistic and sometimes ludicrous ideas of what sex is like or what a girl would like?
I do get that sense. I get the sense that there's a new kind of learned behavior. I had a conversation with Frank Bruni about this for the New York Times, where he was asking me, about the porn question. And I told him that there are certain things that you'll experience when, not like I want to make it sound like I'm all over town, testing different guys' sexual prowesses, but I in my own personal limited sexual experience, I have found that there are guys doing things where you go, there's no way that is your own personal instinct. You learned that from somewhere, and it wasn't, a birds and bees conversation with your mom, and it also wasn't taught to you by a high school girl you met in Michigan. Like, that is something that you have, learned through osmosis culturally, and now want to try yourself, or even more insidiously think that I will like. And I think that young people are really scared to tell each other what they actually want. It's funny, I mean, not to get too personal, but I just found a diary that I kept in college. I've been an intermittent diary keeper, always, never a faithful one. And there was some guy had done something, it wasn't anything, too dramatic. Like, he'd just been, I think, sort of, we'd kissed in college, and he'd been sort of rough with me. And I asked him if he always acted that way. And he said, no, I don't. But with you, I do, because it's clearly what you want.
What made him say
which is,
that?
Which was, to me, I was looking back at it. I think at the time, I just felt this guilt. I was like, why am I, oh my God, what kind of girl am I that I'm projecting that that's what I want? How did I, just massive guilt. And I remember at the time thinking, oh my God, if I could just replay that and act differently, then we could have had this sweet encounter and I've missed out on something great. And I realized now that that's just some way for a guy to shirk responsibility for some weird, embarrassing thing that they've done. And I mean, it's almost like your skirt was too short and you were asking for it. So that's the weirdest human interaction I have on record in my diary. But I was thinking that encounter and that interaction has informed more of my work than I ever knew when I reread it.
Do you think it's difficult, and I don't want to get too personal with you, I don't want to cross a line, so I'll ask generically, do you think it's difficult for young single women to say no to a guy who wants to try some things he's probably learned from a porn site and say, I'm not going to enjoy that, that's not going to be pleasurable, it's not even going to be comfortable?
I do. I mean, it's difficult for me to say no to my friends who want to try a restaurant that I don't think I'm going to like. So it's like, so trying to say no to something that personal and specific, it's really hard. And I also think that, maybe girls will rise up against me and go, I don't know what your problem is, but I feel perfectly comfortable saying no. But, for me, I think that for young women, sex is about sex, but sex is also about wanting to be liked and wanting to be appreciated. And the fear when you say no is that someone will go, okay, well then see you later. Like that you will, lose your loving audience. So I think it is really challenging. And I think in the sexual relationship on the show between Hannah and Adam, I wanted to show that it's not a case of complete victimization. Hannah thinks about sex as a way to learn more about herself, and she kind of feels like she needs to accept whatever opportunity to learn is offered to her. And Adam is continually testing the boundaries and also using sex as a way to experience, to be close and also not to be close. And so he's not going to have the kind of sex where you move slowly and look into each other's eyes. He wants to be near another person, but in the least intimate way possible. And as the season goes on, you sort of learn more about his drives and who he is and what happens when they strip away a little bit of that role play. But it's a complicated dance.
Well, I think you just got to something really difficult emotionally, which is when sex becomes the least intimate way of communicating.
Yeah.
I think that's because it's, you're at your most exposed and vulnerable. So if that's not the most intimate and it's the least intimate, that's so uncomfortable, isn't it?
Yeah. I remember in high school, like long before I'd started having sex with anyone or kissing anyone, thinking, this sounds like a real leap, but I've always had like a little bit of a morbid streak, like a little bit like, we're all going to die, so what's the point? Like that's where my brain goes when I'm tired. And I think I was like lying in bed and I was thinking like, probably once you're in love and once you've had sex, you're not scared of dying because you know what true connection is and you know what the world is all about. And then of the minute that I had sex, I understood that that was at least not yet in my experience the case, and that it was not the cure to like all existential anxiety, and that it's very possible to feel, to be naked and feel quite alone, which is poetic in its own way.
I guess that's one of the points your show's trying to make.
Yeah, and you know, I hope that if we get some time to follow these characters, that they're going to learn that all of the, in quotes, learning about themselves that they're doing through sex will pay off and we'll actually see them know what they want and get it. I mean, I don't want people to sort of think that the show's going to be about awkward sex forever, because awkward sex is funny, but I also want it to be a means to an end for these girls, because, you know, my dream for Hannah, who's now, you know, a girl who's very close to me, is that she's going to at some point realize, you know, as I feel I'm beginning to, what she does and doesn't want and what she will and won't accept, and then be able to say that. And so it would be a dream to be able to follow her to that point.
So, of course, you know, Girls is a comedy. So even though STDs is a real anxiety-producing serious issue for the girls on the show, there's also comedic aspects of it. For example, when Hannah is told by her current boyfriend, Adam, that he doesn't have HPV, he got tested, therefore he couldn't possibly have given it to her, then she thinks, well, the only person I could have gotten it from was my old college boyfriend. So she makes an appointment to see him at a restaurant, and she assumes that he's still in love with her, but she dresses up nicely to break the news that, you know, she got this probably from him, and she thinks she's doing right by both of them in doing this, but she's in for a big surprise. So here's Hannah with her old college boyfriend at a restaurant, and he speaks first. Oh, and I should say, he is played by Andrew Rannells, who is the star of the Broadway musical The Book of Mormon, and he's really incredible.
So he's incredible, and he's a great improviser too, and this was his first day ever, besides the time that he played a headless male dancer on Sex and the City, this was his first ever on-screen performance.
Wow. Okay, here we go.
It's really great to hear from you. Really great to hear from you. I mean, I've been thinking how much I wanted to speak with you.
Well, Elijah, I'm really happy to see you too. I don't want to mislead you. Mm-hmm. I did not bring you here to retread old territory emotionally.
Okay.
I'm more open to it physically, and I brought you here to talk about something pretty specific, which is a little bit touchy.
All right.
And I don't want to assume anything about you and other partners.
It's true.
It's true?
And I hate that you found out through the post-collegiate rumor mill, but I'm glad that you heard, because, you know, things with Beau were moving so quickly, and I just felt like eventually we were going to either see you or...
Beau?
What's his name? Yes.
And Beau is...
My lover.
Who's male?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh.
So...
Oh.
You're gay.
Oh, well, I don't say gay. I don't say straight either. I'm with a person of my own gender, which essentially means that I am, you know,
romantic. Which I love.
Well, thank you.
Which I love.
Thank you. Oh, Hannah.
Don't.
Okay.
I'm fine. What I'm having right now is an inappropriate physical reaction to my total joy for you and your self-discovery.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. And listen, I want you to know that this exploration was very much inspired by you.
And I do explore.
You do.
I mean, right now I'm seeing this guy, and sometimes I let him hit me on the side of my body, so.
I mean, that's great that you're seeing someone.
That's my guest, Lena Dunham and Andrew Reynolds, in a scene from the HBO series Girls. I think so many young men and women find out after relationship that their former partner is now, you know, a lesbian or gay. Has that happened to you? It's really a common.
It has certainly happened to me.
Yeah,
it has happened to me more than once, and it's funny. My mom and I keep saying it must be genetic because she's got like a couple of them in her past too. And so our hope is that what it means is that we are a comfortable resting place for a sensitive guy who's figuring things out. Our fear is that we turn men gay.
Well, your character is really being so insensitive to his discovery about his identity.
Oh, my God. She's being such a brat. She says some really horrifying things. I was really hoping that my gay male friends, of which I have many, would find it hilarious and not think that I was, that I was expressing my own deep-rooted homophobia, because it was really important to me to look at the honest way that even though Hannah's an enlightened liberal girl who probably thinks about gay men as her target audience, she still is not pleased to find out that she was dating one.
And why isn't she pleased?
It has much less to do with him being gay and much more to do with her own sense of identity and her own self-esteem. I mean, I think that her automatic go-to place is, you're gay because I'm fat. That's basically where her brain goes. So I think that's the big anxiety, and also the sense that like your romantic past is a lie. I mean, I think we really define ourselves by the idea that he loved me. That was I was passionately loved in college, and he's never moved past it. Is a huge part of the way that she kind of gets herself through the day. So when she finds out that the person she has spun that narrative about is happily dating a guy named Beau, she's not going to have a positive reaction to that. And I think I was better about it than Hannah was, but there was still like a lack of understanding of the fact that now I can recognize, wow, coming out is really hard. And even if you've gone to liberal arts school and have parents who have PFLAG parents, it's still just, it's a challenging move to make in a world where gay rights are still not what they should be. And so coming out is hard. And I think that I wish Hannah and a little bit me had a more sensitive reaction to sort of the courage that it took to make that transition in identity, rather than deciding it meant that like my breasts were in some way subpar.
So one of the things that happens to your character in Girls comes directly from your own experience. She has tattoos on her body, and the tattoos are illustrations from children's books. And yeah. I think that's almost, and I know that's, you have that too. I think it's a perfect illustration of the a perfect metaphor for where the character is. She's trying to like assert her independence and adulthood through something like tattoos, but what are the tattoos pictures of? Childhood books.
Yeah. That's amazing. I've actually never thought about that, but that's an incredibly clear, nice visual for what she's experiencing.
So why did you want your tattoos, which are usually signs of like rebellion, to be childhood books?
Well, it's funny. I got my first tattoo when I was 17, and it was Eloise from the book Eloise on my lower back in the sort of tramp stamp place. And then and then from there on out, I just, the next idea I had was a children's book idea. I've always been drawn to like the softness but sophistication of children's book illustrations. And there was something about being able to sort of carry my child. Eloise was a huge symbol of comfort for me. And so there was something about being able to sort of like carry those pieces of my childhood on me always. And the idea that they would be, that sort of a never forget feeling that I really liked. And so that was sort of, I think, the impetus for starting with the tattoos. And it really also was this thing, which I say in the show, about sort of taking ownership of your own body. Like, as I think so much body modification and kind of out there style moves are that, it's sort of the desire to kind of reclaim your body and go, this is not what society thinks it is. You may see a chubby teenage girl, but I'm making the choice. I am making bold choices about how I want to look and how I want to feel.
So to sum up here, you have pictures of your favorite childhood books on your body, which every mm-hmm. sexual partner will see. And it's not exactly like the most sexually charged kind of imagery. I mean, who else is going to see those images, right?
So that's absolutely true.
So what does that mean?
Well, that's such an interesting question. You know, it's really funny. There's firstly, it's always a topic of conversation, whether you're doing a sex scene or whether you're doing actual sex, what these things are. And I think, you know, when I started getting tattoos, it was before I had any sexual relationship to anybody. So it was really about my relationship with myself. And so I kind of like that they come from that spot, that they were never sort of sensually motivated. They were really personally motivated. And so now I think about it more like people who I'm naked near are seeing these sort of artifacts of who I once was and maybe getting a clearer sense of who I am. There's something very vulnerable about showing your tattoos to people, even while it gives you a feeling that you're wearing a sleeve when you're naked.
Well, Lena Dunham, it's really been great to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Terry. You always make me think a lot.
Oh, thank you. And congratulations on Girls.
Thank you.
Actress, writer, and director Lena Dunham speaking to Terry Gross in 2012. Dunham's HBO series Girls returns this Sunday, and season one is now out on DVD. Coming up, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews a new CD featuring a recently discovered vintage recording by jazz guitarist Grant Green. This is Fresh Air.